Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Women Emerging podcast. I'm Julian Middleton, founder of Women Emerging and your podcast host. Every Wednesday, I explore how women lead differently. Over time, all of us who are part of Women Emerging are determined to redefine leading so that more of us can say, if that's leading, I'm in. Over the last 4 weeks, the episodes have been about cultural intelligence, and this is the fifth of those episodes. Cultural intelligence, or CQ. It's not about IQ. They haven't been about EQ. They've been about CQ, the ability to work with people who are very different from you. Episode one was why. Why do we need cultural intelligence at all? Episode two was understanding your own culture, which I reckon is probably the hardest culture you'll ever have to deal with. And introduced you to the concept of core and flex to understand your own culture. Then episodes three and four were, well, they went beyond your own culture to when your culture meets another culture, when there are two cores and two flexes, and we looked at how to navigate this. So over the last 4 weeks, a number of you have sent me questions. In fact, a lot of you have sent me questions. And I thought we would devote this episode to answering some of them. I've chosen 12 questions that you've asked me. So here goes. The first one was, oh, cultural intelligence, that's really about race, isn't it? And I know that race features big time for a lot of people. But I think no. I think cultural intelligence is about all different cultures, whether they be a geographical or generational, sectoral, about specialisms, about backgrounds, about beliefs, about aspirations, about abilities. Almost everybody you meet will have a different culture from you. So I think cultural intelligence is about interfacing with cultures that aren't your own, way beyond just race. Another message I've had is people saying, oh, core and flex. Core is really about values and flex is about behaviours. And the answer is no. To me, values and behaviours exist in core, and values and behaviours exist in flex. In core may be my deep belief in equality. In my core might be the fact that I naturally take a step forward and shake people's hands when I meet them. There are as many behaviours in your core. If I stopped believing in equality, if I stopped taking a step forward and shaking people's hands, I reckon I wouldn't be me anymore. So core is values and behaviours, as is flex. Sometimes also people say to me, oh, flex is what you haven't made your mind up about. No, that's wrong too. Flex, you absolutely have made your mind about. You have decided to be flexible about it. So my third question is, does your core really change over time? For some people, I think they believe that their core is sort of fixed and will never change. Now, in my experience, it does indeed change over time. My core, when I was young, was largely defined by my father, whom I adored. It disappeared almost entirely during my teenage years. As I've met other cultures, I've had to think through whether things that I assumed were in my core were actually in my flex, and things that I thought were in my flex actually were in my core. So no, I think it does readjust. It readjusts constantly. The line between core and flex will move around gently. It won't sway around, but it will move around. And certainly, you know, I am now 66. Next week, I'm 67. And I can feel my core creeping up on me. You know, I'm beginning to get into that thing of thinking that I know best because I'm old. And core gets bigger. And you have to, I think, when you're my age, begin to really consciously push it back down and remind yourself that there's a lot of flexing to be done. Fourth question, does an organisation have a core and flex too? And the answer, of course, to that is yes. Any culture has a core and a flex. You and I have our own cultures. Organisations have their own cultures. Places have their own culture. And I think it's worth thinking through what the core and the flex of any culture would be. To me, some of the organisations I've both worked in and interfaced with spend indeed far too much time agonising what their core is. And I'm always tempted to say, well, hang on, let's stop talking about our core. Let's talk about our flex. And indeed, if I've ever applied to a role or a job or a board and been in an interview, when I get my questions, my opportunity to ask questions, I very, very seldom ask them about what's in their core as cultures of this organisation. I'm much more interested in what they're flexible about. To me, that reveals an enormous amount. The fifth question, which I'm asked very, very often, is what is the optimal position of the line between core and flex? And as I say, I think this is the wrong question, because I think if you're asking me what the optimum position is, it's usually about saying, when will I achieve cultural intelligence? When will I achieve this fictional optimal position? So first thought is, I don't think you ever do get cultural intelligence. I think that the journey carries on right through your life. And I shall probably be lying in my deathbed asking myself about my core and my flex. But I think that there isn't an optimal position. I think that the way of figuring out whether you are healthily on your journey towards cultural intelligence is not by saying, have I achieved a fictional perfect line? It's whether my line is moving. Whether as I go, I'm calibrating, recalibrating, rethinking, questioning my core, questioning my flex, moving things from one to the other. As I say, not swinging, because you're calibrating it. I think the sign of healthy cultural intelligence is a line that is under constantly review between core and between flex. I think one of my favourite stories about this was when I was asked to go and do a speech in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. This was a number of years ago, and I was very honoured to be asked. And I must say, I sat down and people began to ask me whether I would cover when I went to Jeddah. And it was a big question in my head. I couldn't figure out what was the right thing to do and what was the right thing for me to do. And I was torturing myself slightly on this when I remember one evening, I have a lot of children, but my three daughters, the three children in the middle, the three daughters came to see me and said, Mum, you have been an independent woman for all these years, Mum. You are not surely considering the idea that you might cover just because you're going and cover yourself with an abaya just because you're going to Jeddah. And, you know, we all have to listen to our children and you don't have to agree with them, but you have to listen to them. And I did think about it and I thought about it a lot longer. And the position I got to in the end was, what I wear has always, always, always been in my flex. It's not in my core. I'm unfussed about what I wear. So if it's been in my flex for all these years, then why change it now? So I chose to cover. I wore an abaya as we flew into Saudi airspace. I went into the loo and changed clothes and arrived in Jeddah. Jeddah's wonderful. Like, I love port cities. Port cities are places where the world convenes. It's a wonderful place. Anyhow, I did my speech. And you know, it was really interesting. As I met all these women who covered, I had to recognize something that had been in my core that I was totally unaware of. I think I began to realize that I had always assumed that women, ultimately, who chose to cover because of weakness. And surrounded by all those amazing women in that extraordinary city who chose to cover, it was almost impossible to maintain that position. And I dusted down that view of my core that had lived in my core, dusted it down and moved it out because it wasn't accurate. Anyhow, when I then got on the flight coming home, it was quite interesting because when I came home and talked about the stories back in London of doing my talk in Jeddah, it was quite interesting. There were a number of people who said, "Ah, you see." And I said, "What do you mean? Ah, you see?" They said, "Ah, you see, you go to Jeddah and you cover yourself." But they, the great they, always dangerous, the great they come to London and refuse to wear Western clothes. And I remember looking at them and saying, my clothes are in my flex. The women I met in Jeddah, their clothes are in their core. And looked at it that way, your point is completely ridiculous. And it was compounded a few years later because I remember my eldest son got married in Bangalore in India to a wonderful person. And I remember thinking about it a lot. And I remember everybody saying to me, would I wear a sari at the wedding? And I said, no, absolutely not. I will not wear a sari at the wedding. I'm not from India, so that's in my bag, disrespectful. And the second thing is that you can't see me, but I'm quite fat and I have sort of rolls of fat around the middle of my stomach where really there should be a waist. And you know, saris tend to show those off and I would feel very uncomfortable. Anyhow, I said, no, I will not wear a sari at the wedding. And I got a delegation of those three daughters again the next day and they came to see me. And I remember Rachel saying to me, "Mum," "Yes." "I thought you said what you wear is in your flex." "Yeah, it is." So I wore a sari at the wedding. I think you need people like Rachel to call you out, to remind you. And I think that flex muscle needs to be, like all muscles, constantly... It needs to be constantly exercised, just to remind yourself. Sixth question, do I have to reveal my core? Now, that question came from a young student. And it's quite interesting. I sent her a message back and said, do you talk to other students and ask them lots of questions about their core? And she said, yes, I do. And I said, why? And she said, because I want to understand their culture. And I said, but if you're asking questions about other people's cause, surely you have to be prepared to reveal your own core too. You have to meet like with like. You have to have that generosity both ways. And particularly if you're leading, if you don't reveal your core, how do people figure out whether they trust you or not? So indeed, reveal your core. Your core isn't private, and particularly it isn't private if you're leading. You have to reveal it. Question seven is, does my core get smaller as the flex gets bigger? When I try to answer that, I think about the years of my sort of late teens and early 20s, when I was a migrant and living in countries other than my own. And I remember the terror in my grandparents' eyes, that they thought that I was going to develop so much flexibility that I would lose all sense of who I was and my own culture and indeed my own core. And I remember the sadness because they were so worried and I didn't want to worry them. But certainly that is the question for migrants, you know, how much do you learn to flex and how much do you keep your own core? And I suppose my answer is, remember that your flex can get bigger, not just by going in one direction and taking over part of your core. It can also get bigger if the cone gets bigger, if the opening on the right-hand side of the cone gets bigger. Your flex can become enormous and still not encroach upon your core. So, no, I don't think your core does get smaller. It might get questioned and it might review itself, but I don't think it necessarily gets smaller. Your eighth question is, how do I find my core? And I suppose I can only answer that for myself. I do things that I love doing and ask myself why I love doing them. So, for example, I love painting. It's not that I'm good at painting. In fact, I'm not very good at painting. I'm better than many because I've done it for a while, but I'm not that good. But I love painting and I particularly love painting movement. I can't do still life. I love the clouds moving, the sea moving, the grass moving. I love movement. And I think movement is probably an important part of my core. When things stand still, then that's not me. I love movement. I don't even mind if movement's going in the wrong direction, because even if movement is going in the wrong direction, you have the possibility of flipping it and getting it to go in the right direction. Whereas when things become static, that's when I begin to become uncomfortable. I go to places that I love. Well, when I really want to be in places I love, it's where there are trees. I love trees. They remind you that they'll still be there when you're long gone and that they have been there for a lot longer than you are and that they are all connected through the earth by their mycelium. I love trees and I suppose that means that in my core it's the sense of the continuity that people have gone before you and people have gone after you, and that's a big piece of my core. I also try to go to places that I am deeply uncomfortable in and where I'm likely to make mistakes because I don't understand what's going on, and analyzing my own discomfort can sometimes tell me a lot about my core, sometimes stuff that I don't really want to know. But it certainly teaches me a lot about my core. I try to do things that I don't do, go to places that I don't go to, eat food in different kinds of food, do things in different ways, force myself to do art that I find uncomfortable. I try to do on a reason, you know, about once a month, something that on the whole I don't do. And that teaches me a lot about my core, whether I really, these things are in my core, and thinking them through and understanding where you're coming from. When I want to understand my core, I also go back to stories of my heritage. I have a very deep sense of a story. My father, who was born in significant poverty, had an opportunity to join the Second World War to travel and to see parts of the world he'd never seen and to grow. And he once came back and was going back to his parents' house on a train. And there were two men on the train who were talking quite loudly and quite knowledgeably and quite defeatist. And my father, who was a very junior, went up and put them under house arrest. And they then apologised and told him, young man, you're right. And he walked down the train, went back to sleep, and one of the men walked down the train behind him and came and sat down, woke him up, came and sat down behind him And the result was that the man offered my father a job that my father could never have dreamt of if he came back and saw him at the end of the war. So to me, what does it, you know, that story is so baked into me, that story of stand up, say things, don't sit quietly, don't efface yourself, don't rub yourself out, stand up, don't hide or pretend that you don't hear things. I go to my favourite books and ask myself why I love these books. I love stories are fine. The stories I love are about friendships. I absolutely love those friendships, and friendships are fundamental to my core. I've never been interested in networks. I've always been interested in relationships and friendships. And I go to the children's books that I used to read to my own children. And there was one called You're Going on a Bear Hunt. I don't know if you knew it. You know, you can't go over the problem. You can't go round the problem. You can't go under the problem. You've got to go through the problem. That is absolutely fundamentally part of my core, is that you have to just keep going when the problem's happening. And then I think the last one is think through the moments of stress when maybe the worst thing comes out in you. I remember, I mean, I've got a lot of children, and only once did my son rush across a road when I'd always taught them to stand at the side and look very carefully and wait for me. And he rushed across the road, and I remember I slapped him. It is the only memory of slapping a child. It's one I'm never very proud of, but it absolutely, when I go back and I think about it, it tells me a lot about my core and about what it takes for me to do something like that. So think through what happens to you when you're in moments of stress, because I think that reveals a lot about your own core. Question 9, how do you nurture your core? I think you nurture it by making sure that it's yours, not a core that's inherited or imposed or adopted. It's got to be yours. It's got to be kept under constant review. It cannot ossify. You have to be asking yourself questions all the time about your core. And remember that your core is not just the big things, the existential questions. It's about the small things. As I say, how you greet people. I remember someone talking to me about how she greeted people. And she said, I want it to show my friendliness. And I remember saying to her, you know, if you make that gesture at me, the last thing on earth I think you are doing is showing friendship. And it was quite interesting. She said, okay, I've got to rephrase it that. How I express where my greetings of somebody is in my core, but I'm going to have to change it. So I think about the big things, but also the small things, the gestures, the movements of your eyes. And remember those small things matter a lot, because when you're leading, it's worth remembering that everybody's always looking at you. They're always looking for your core or your flex. And they're looking at even the smallest indications of them. It's one of the hardest bit about leading, is that so many people are looking at you. So for example, you know, I am so bad at eye contact once I've lost respect for somebody. As soon as I don't rate them anymore, I will not look them in the eye. And he's so obvious. And I have to not be quite as obvious as that. That has to come out. That's a behaviour I've got to change. Does core and flex help in learning parenting? I think it does. I think it's a very useful methodology. Parenting is culture too. I think it's particularly helpful when you get to the teenage years, when your children in their teenage years, and where you have to, as I say, discover that really tough moment when you realize that your children do not have the same core as you. Just like nobody will ever have exactly the same core as you, there will be things that you have in common, but very, very different. Some of my daughters have done things that not in a million years would I do. Even if I look at the most basic, for example, in my core, I never, ever, 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 ever have worn makeup. Why? Lots of reasons, I suppose. But all my daughters do. And they do for very different reasons from me. You know, at the most basic, it's recognizing that other people have different cores and other people have different flexes. But I think also with children, you have to figure out what is in your core. So, for example, if my sons acquired any of the culture of the outside world that put girls down and brought that back into our household, that's not on. It wouldn't have been on anyhow because there were three tough girls who would have kicked it out. But there was also me. They knew that a core part of the Middleton household is that that behaviour is not acceptable. So I think, yes, cornflakes does help. But remember, it's not just about core. It's about flex. It's about flex, 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 flex. And other people have different flex from you. A lot, I remember my brother's children coming to stay with us, and they'd been brought up in Canada, and they would say, "Oh God," all the time. Almost the words tripped up from their sentence. Now, that's not acceptable in my husband's core, in our family. And it took a long time to try and explain to my nieces that it didn't work in our household. Yes. So, cornflakes, yes, I think it helps in parenting. Number 10, how do you nurture your flex? I think by keeping on exercising it, pushing yourself into unfamiliar situations, and then trying to figure out what's just happened. I think your flex particularly remains flexible if you don't just have support networks, people who love you, but also turbulence networks, people who question you, who are very different from you. So yes, I think you nurture your flex by constantly putting it to the test and throwing it out into the clean air and then figuring out what's happening. Number 11, how do you find the knots in your core? Are knots really just prejudice? And the answer is, yes, they are prejudice. They're bias. But in a funny way, by calling them knots, I've found that people talk about them much more. They're knots. You know, knots can be untangled. So I think you find your knots in your core if you assume that they are there and you're constantly pushing yourself into situations where you will discover them, and then you will bravely look at them clearly in the eye and say, I'm going to move that to my flex. And then number 12, do you really always have to stand up to cultural intolerance? No, not always. Maybe you're too tired. Maybe you've had enough. Maybe this is the wrong moment. So if you do it all the time, I think you grind yourself into nothingness. But I do think that you need to say to yourself, I will stand up to this cultural intolerance, not because there is much chance of necessarily changing the views of the person who holds it, who has these knots in their core and expresses them and makes them culturally intolerant. I think it's very hard to change them unless they've chosen to change themselves. But I do think that you need to remember that you are often, especially when you're leading, standing up to cultural intolerance and naming it and pushing back at it. Not for the person you're speaking to, but for the other people in the room who know and see that you will stand up and stick to your own core and your own flex and call out other ones. So drawing all of this to the close, I think the biggest things to remember on cultural intelligence are you won't get it right every time, and it's a bumpy ride, almost certainly with no ultimate destination. Secondly, when you meet people, don't regard yourself as the benchmark against which you judge other cultures. you are not the benchmark. You're just different. 3, remember that flex is as important as core. I mean, I almost believe that the main purpose of having a core is to allow yourself to have an enormous flex. And then I think the 4th one is to just remember that we all put a lot of effort into understanding other cultures, and actually your own culture is probably the toughest. Watching it, understanding the core, understanding the flex, moving the line between the two, recognizing what's going on around you and what's going on inside yourself, and discovering those knots in your core that really don't belong there. Next week, we carry on cultural intelligence, but I'm reverting back to my comfort zone. Next week and the week after will be 2 illustrations of core and flex. One will be an interview with Francesca, and another one will be an interview with Okonwa. Next week's with Francesca, that remarkable author of those wonderful Rebel Girl books, will talk to us about why she's now produced a book for rebel boys. And from it, I think we can draw a lot of knowledge about how, as a woman, you start leading men. If you get that first moment when you get an all-men male team to lead, what are the things that you need to have and remember is in their core and in their flex? So I totally recommend next week's episode. But in the meantime, I send you lots and lots and lots of love, Julia. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow our podcast channel or follow us on Instagram. Or join the Women Emerging community on LinkedIn or through our website, womenemerging.org. That's womenemerging.org. There you can find out about the expeditions that we're currently running and how we can help if you decide to start an expedition yourself.